And joining us today is Katie Workman. Katie is the author of the book, Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, Including You. Yes, that means you. And we're going to talk about some of these recipes. But first of all, I'd like to thank Katie for taking the time to be with us. Thank you, Katie, for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit about, have you always been interested in cooking and writing?
I have, actually. When I was young, I just loved cookbooks. I read them in bed with a little flashlight, like a little tiny cookbook dork. And I loved them. And I really got to respect, you know, people who wrote in a particular voice and people who had particular expertise. And it was just really something that, you know, I love when people had stories behind the recipes or could tell you some of the history or, you know, about ingredients. It just really was always so interesting to me. And I was very interested in cooking when I was a kid as well. And, you know, started like many kids do with the Bisquick coffee cakes and Nestle Toll House cookies.
And, you know, a lot of us, when we get a recipe from our mom or aunt or grandma, a lot of them are handwritten. And that really makes it interesting sometimes because you'll see this card and has like stains of, you know, and a bunch of other stuff. And you're wondering how much history is behind this recipe. And, you know, how many times did grandma do it? Or can I do it the right way? And as you mentioned, reading under cookbooks under the covers, some people might go, what? But there are a lot of cookbooks that come, as you mentioned, with a little bit of history behind the recipe and behind the food in general.
It's true. And it's funny you should say that because I just was at my friend's house for dinner with his mother, who's 92 years old, and she had kept a food journal that went from 1960, I think, to like 1984. Wow. Every meal that she made for guests, she wrote down who was there and what she served, and sometimes she had little seating charts written in, like, pencil, and it was, I just was sitting there completely mesmerized by it for about half an hour the other day, and I was reading her the things she made and the people she had over, and she was clearly, like, just reminiscing about all of it. It was just so wonderful.
Now, you said you started cooking at a young age, like, you know, using the Nestle Toll cookie chips or, you know, nowadays, I think, I'm not sure if baking has kind of left the scene or because we're so busy, but I think people still enjoy a home-baked cookie from your mom or your dad or whoever instead of the, you know, I'm sure they'll eat the Sam's cookie or the Costco cookie or one that comes out of the freezer, but the home-baked from scratch is always the best.
It really is. Well, first of all, there's nothing like the smell of cookies baking, right? I mean, that alone is a reason to bake cookies, even if you're not doing them completely from scratch. But it's just, you can taste the difference. And I, like everybody else, have made my fair share of cookies that are, you know, break and bake or, you know, slice and bake. But if you have, you know, an extra handful of minutes and you can make some homemade cookies, it makes people so happy. I don't know of anything that makes people happier than a homemade cookie. And I just brought some, actually, into my office to thank everybody who worked on the cookbook. And it just, you know, you just walk around with a plate of cookies and you feel like you're some sort of Greek god or something.
We're going to have to give you our address.
I might just show up with some big, chewy brownie cookies.
Oh, yes. Welcome to Texas. And
I was just in Texas. I wish I'd known. We should have coordinated.
Well, Texas is such a huge state. Where were you, in Dallas?
I was in Dallas.
Yeah, that's about, I think, 10 hours away from us, right?
Yeah, I know. So, I know. And I know you Texans don't like to be confused with people from other areas of Texas, so I apologize.
No, that's okay. because there's a lot of nice recipes here in the El Paso area that have gone on to Texas, and Texas has its own share of, you know, famous restaurants and famous recipes. And
it's true.
You, as first of all, let's talk about your first book. I guess it was called The Mom 100. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the first book that you came out with, had you already envisioned perhaps, you know, saying someday I think I'm going to put a cookbook together? Or how did this come about, Katie?
Well, The Mom 100 cookbook was an idea that I had in the back of my head. I thought, you know, I think it would be so great to have a cookbook that just you could go to, you know, you have all your cookbooks and you use them for all these different reasons, but what if you had just that one book that every time you had a typical mom or parent dilemma, you knew the answer was in that book. And I was thinking about, you know, parents who are saying, you know, oh, I have to get a kid to, you know, my kid to try fish, or I have to get my kid to eat more vegetables, or I didn't get out of the my same old making chicken breast rut, or, oh, my God, my kid just came home and told me there was a big sale tomorrow and I have to make brownies. I can't believe it. And if you just had a book that had answers to all of these dilemmas, I thought that would be just such a great go-to answer book for parents. And just at that moment, my good friend, longtime cookbook editor, I had been doing quite a bit of writing at that point, and my friend took me out to lunch and said, I think you should write a cookbook. And I said, well, I actually just had this idea. And I told her the idea, and she loved it. And that's how it became the Mom 100 Cookbook, 100 recipes every mom needs in her back pocket.
Now, with that number alone, did it seem at first like, oh, my gosh, where am I going to get 100 recipes? And if I do get them, how am I going to be able to store them as far as, like, leave some out, put some in, et cetera?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The good thing about the way this book was organized, and I think this is probably true of most cookbooks, is, again, there was 20 dilemmas. So there was, you know, the fish chapter was, which is subtitled, like, Eat Your Damn Fish, is, you know, 5 recipes that answer, that figure out what are some good fish recipes the whole family would like. And then the same thing with meat, and the same thing with one dish, and the same thing with, you know, bake sale. So if you go at each piece of it one at a time, you know, I need 5 appetizers that are simple to put together, that really work for when, you know, people are coming over at the last minute or I have to bring something to a potluck. So it's almost like you tackle, it's not that I tested the recipe only by chapter, but in thinking about the recipes, you could think about, I need 5 answers to this problem. So it became more manageable.
We are visiting with Katie Workman, and Katie is the author of The Mom 100 and Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, including you. And as we're talking about this, first of all, I'm on your homepage for the Mom 100 Cookbook, and it's talking about the bookstore and moving from New York to Westport, Connecticut. Is that about you, Katie?
Yeah, so the blog, the Mom 100 blog, is a blog that I've written for about 3.5 years now, and it's called themom100.com and the Mom 100 blog because that was the name of my first book. But it was, so I put up new recipes there all the time, and then sometimes I put up stories about, you know, things that have happened or memories or, you know, people that I love or, you know, various other things other than recipes may sometimes appear.
And in this blog that you write, one of the things that sticks out is because it says, we were and are Jewish, and we celebrated Hanukkah. And culture, the reason I bring that up is because ethnicity and culture has a lot to do with recipes and cooking. And a lot of times, these recipes will introduce your friends to your culture, your ethnic group, whatever. And because, you know, everybody loves food.
It's true. And it is. I love when I get to go to somebody else's house and they make me something that's, you know, part of their history and their family, and when I get a chance to taste something that, you know, somebody's, you know, relatives are Thai, and oh my gosh, I have a friend whose mother is Vietnamese, and this is so cute. She's Vietnamese, and they live in North Carolina. So she is an excellent cook, and she makes 2 kinds of food. She makes Vietnamese food, and she makes Southern food. So this woman makes, like, the best dumplings in the world and the best fried chicken in the world. And, you know, she probably couldn't cook a Mexican dish to save her life, but she's got these 2 different areas of expertise. And for me, it's like I just love, you know, every Hanukkah I make potato pancakes and invite over a bunch of people, and people, you know, some people just say, oh, my God, I haven't had a good potato pancake since I was at your house last year. But other times people are like, I've never had a potato pancake. And, you know, it's really fun when somebody tastes something for the first time.
And it's really a compliment, I would imagine, when someone says, oh, my gosh, I haven't had one of these since my grandmother made this for,
yes,
you know,
yes,
whoever, whoever.
So yes, many memories. Like, people always have a story about exactly that. They say, you know, oh, my God, I haven't had this. And when my grandmother used to make them, I remember because we'd drive there and she lived so-and-so, and that they, you know, have this whole memory that comes out, and it's really nice. It's you know, that's one of the best things about being a food writer is you sort of have a chance to you know, explore the stories that are connected to the recipes.
Tell us about Facebook and social media, Katie, because the reason I brought that up, because not too long ago, someone put up there a picture of a sandwich wrapped in wax paper, and they put, "How many of you remember this?" And of course, a lot of people were going back to, "Oh, I remember sack lunches my mom used to put for us," and everybody had a different idea for a sack lunch.
That's so funny. Well, when you said that, I have this instant memory as well, because when I was a kid, they had, when you didn't like the hot lunch at school, bizarrely, what the school believed was an acceptable, nutritious alternative to the hot lunch that you didn't want to eat was not one, but two peanut butter and marshmallow fluff sandwiches in those little wax sack bag things. And I just look at that now and I think, oh, my God, that is like just like this weird fat calorie bomb that, you know, I can't. And it was on white bread, of course.
Yes.
So that's my wax paper recollection. But in social media wise, I mean, it's so much fun to be able to connect with people online. And especially if you're sharing a common memory or you're asking a question. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I'll use it to ask, you know, ask my readers what they're interested in or what, you know, what recipes they want the most. You know, it's, on the flip side, social media has become sort of all-consuming for any of us who are writers or do media, because there's just so many platforms and you're expected to be on them all the time, and it's not always, it can become less of a pleasure and more of a task, which, you know, we all have to work against and just try to remember that There are some days where Facebook is just not the priority.
And a lot of times, though, where there used to be a radio or a television in the kitchen, now you see the ever-present laptop there because somebody is watching a YouTube video on how to prepare something or reading a recipe from the internet.
That's right. That's right. And I love the internet, and I use it for everything, as you know, we all do at this point. But there's also something about a book where, you know, the photograph's there and you can touch the page and turn the page. And when you have a favorite recipe, that page gets splattery and stuck to the page before it. And you know that that's the meatloaf recipe that you have made six times and you love so much. And so I think, you know, both things have their place. And, you know, the other thing with the internet is when you are looking for a recipe, you really have to consider, as with everything, what is the source? What is the source of this recipe? Because if it is not a person that you trust or a company that you trust or a website that you trust, you're about to put your hard-earned time and energy and ingredient money into a recipe that may or may not give you the results you want. So it's something, you know, there's amazing websites out there. And again, I use them for thoughts and inspiration and, you know, try out some of their recipes. But you do have to know that you're looking at something reliable and not just somebody who just decided to throw up their grandmother's recipe, but they really don't know how to write a recipe properly. I mean, recipe writing is a real, you know, it's a learned skill.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because if you said grandma, and I know here in El Paso and being on the border and with the Hispanic culture, a lot of us have sometimes a recipe from grandma who doesn't say put in half a cup of this or put in a half a teaspoon of that. They'll say a pinch of this, a little handful
right.
of this. And so
right.
you have to interpret it. And you're watching mom do it like grandma used to do it and going, "Well, mom, how do you remember? You just know."
Yep. And there's something so nice about that. And, you know, but I think, unfortunately, the amount of people who find cooking to be intuitive at this point in our sort of our lives and our culture and our country,
mm-hmm.
there's, I think the generation that's coming up, and even the generation that's my generation, didn't grow up so comfortable in the kitchen. So these recipes that would have made more sense to people who understood things like scald the milk or, you know, or even just things would cook in a hot oven until done. I mean, most people would look at that and say, "I'm not trying that recipe. That's like, that's not enough information for me to feel sure." And I collect old cookbooks too. And one of my favorite cookbooks has a recipe in it. One of my favorite recipes, I should say. I remember it was a recipe for some turkey dish. And the first step in the recipe is catch the turkey.
That sounds almost like one of the cookbooks that I bought at a garage sale, and I think mine is either late 1700s or early 1800s, but it says, make sure you put whatever you had just prepared in a very hot oven.
Yes,
and of course,
yes.
It doesn't say temperature or anything because they didn't gauge that back then.
I actually just was in England on a family vacation, and we were in Yorkshire and rented a very old little house for our friends and ourselves, and they had an AGA oven, A-G-A, which a lot of people in this country have never heard of. It was very big in England 100-plus years ago, and these ovens were, you know, wood burning and coal burning, and they were used not only to cook but to heat the house. And they have, there's two burners on top and two very small ovens by our standards. I mean, you could never fit it like a regular baking sheet in either of these ovens. And the ovens and the burners have no temperature gauges. There's nothing about them, and the more you open them, the more they lose heat. So you have to, like, if this was your oven, you would get to know it the way you would get to know, like, your children. You have, like, a relationship with this oven, and you understand how the oven works. But I was cooking in it, and it was just so interesting because you're just putting something in, and, you know, how hot is it? How long does it take? I don't know. So it was really, but it was very cool. It was very, I felt very pioneer-like.
We're visiting with Katie Workman. Katie is the author of the cookbook Dinner Solved. It features 100 recipes and recipes in a variety of ways. We're going to talk a little bit about that in just a minute. But at the beginning of the book, like most authors, you thank people who have helped you. And, of course, your family is very important to you, and you thank your husband. But I'm interested in what you said about your son, Charlie. And you said that being his mom is like going to a different amusement park ride every day. Tell us about this.
Both my boys are just, I mean, I'm their mother. Of course, I think they're both fabulous, and they are both fabulous. Even people who aren't their mother think that they're both fabulous. But Charlie's just, he's just like this very enterprising kid. You know, he's just, he picks up all these different interests, and, you know, he'll come in one day, and he'll be like, I want to build a lair. And you're like, what? Where? You know, he made, years ago, he wanted to bring home a tree frog from school at the end of the year, and I was sort of hemming and hawing and saying no. And he decided to make a PowerPoint presentation about all the reasons he should have a tree frog. And, you know, recently we just saw, he just picked up the banjo because he likes Mumford and Sons. So he's a kid with a lot of interest. He just went to camp, and at the end of it, I saw him in a play, a rock band, and a trapeze performance.
Wow.
Yeah. So you definitely sort of, you know, every day is a little bit of a different moment with him.
And I'm sure that, you know, being his friend would just be an awesome experience. And being his mom, of course, you have this opportunity to take him with you everywhere, and he's with you. And as he gets older, some more adventures will come your way.
Yeah, well,
good adventures, I hope, yes. Okay, we are visiting with Katie Workman. Katie is the author of the cookbook Dinner Solved, and this features 100 recipes for the whole family. And we're going to talk about those recipes in just a minute, but I'm talking about the book right now and talking with Katie about some of the things that she's encountered while her cooking and baking and everything else. But in this book, on the website, actually, it says that one of the things that you featured in your first cookbook, and also, I guess, in the second one also, is the fork in the road. Tell us about that.
So the fork in the road, which, as you say, started in the first book and now is present in every recipe in Dinner Solved, is the notion that you can take one recipe, start making it, stop at a certain point, and then have two versions or more come out at the end. So this is the idea that you can make a chili and have it be, one version be milder and one version be spicier. You could make a fish dish and keep one, take some pieces out and leave them very nicely plain and simple, and then go ahead and make a really interesting pan sauce and top the rest of the fish fillets. Or you could make a chili that was vegetarian and then at some point divide it into two and add meat to one of the pots. So you've got one version for the carnivores and one version for the veggies.
And that's a lot of interesting things to know, because our friends are as different as their taste. And sometimes somebody comes over and they have a special diet. Some other people don't like this. Some other don't like that. And sometimes it's for health reasons. And Here, El Paso, Juarez border, there are a lot of incidents of people with diabetes. And I'm sure that, you know, you've encountered that yourself, the fact that people are diabetic. So they think because they're diabetic that food isn't going to work for them anymore. They're going to have to eat some bland food. And that's not the case.
No, it's definitely not the case. And, you know, one of the things I also talk about in the book is, you know, different ways to add, lift flavor without necessarily reaching for salt, which, by the way, I love salt. I think that people really, really underestimate the amount of you know, flavor enhancement. Just a little bit of salt will do in their food, especially at the very end. But you can also use things like, I love using acids in my cooking, which is, acids is just sort of a culinary way of saying vinegar and citrus juice, because if you just put a little squeeze of lime juice or lemon juice into something at the end of it, brighten up that soup so much. I mean, if you, this Mexican tortilla soup, for instance, that I have in the book, it's just that squeeze of lime at the end, and it's like all the flavors just like lift up their heads and just get so much more interesting. So there's ways to you know, make your food exciting without resorting to things that you feel are, you know, less than healthy.
We are visiting with Katie Workman, and Katie is the author of The Dinner Solved, the 100 Recipes for the Whole Family, including you. And Katie, there aren't as many, you know, when I guess your mom, maybe, was your mom a housewife?
My mom, she was at home with us until I was about 10, 12, and then she started working. So sort of a combination.
Okay, so the point I want to bring across is that a lot of women are working outside of the home now, not like it used to be. And so because with the two partners working, they're going to have to say, okay, who's going to be dinner? And it's, I only have half an hour, I only have an hour. So what is the solution for the quick fix? It's, I'm sure there's more than the, just pick something out of the freezer and stick it in the microwave. And you tell us about that in your book.
Yeah, there's, you know, with two working people in the house, there's, I mean, just touching on that for a moment, you really, you know, it's a very different dynamic than it used to be. And every household's different, too. And it's not just that necessarily two parents are working, but, you know, there's, I mean, there's single-parent homes, and there's, you know, there's kids moving back home after they go to school because they're, you know, saving up money, and there's people who have their parents living home. So I just, you know, the dinner table is definitely not like Jane, Joey, and the, you know, smiling mom and dad. So, and there's so many more different dietary issues, but more importantly, there's just a lot of things that people sort of know what they like and they know what they don't like. And you should always, of course, keep moving forward with your kids and keep trying to get them to be interested in new things. And you have to keep, often is you know, it is not the first or the second or maybe even the seventh time that you're going to serve them that tilapia that they're going to turn around and say, you know what, that is some good fish. But if you stop, there's no chance that that's going to happen. So, you know, I think that's just, you have to also try not to get into some sort of battle of wills with your kids because it doesn't end well.
And I'm sure you've heard, Katie, as many parents have heard, someone opening the fridge or the cabinet saying, there's nothing to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. And often, I mean, to me, I look and I'm like, oh, you know, really? But, you know, there's 15 things in there that I would eat. But, I mean, I will say it's funny because my older son, Jack, would say, you know, he'd say, can we have a snack? And I'd be cooking something. And I wrote about this in the book, too. And, you know, I'd be like, okay, who wants some, like, vegetable lo mein? And he was like, that is not a snack. I'm like, why is that not a snack? It is what I'm cooking, and it's available to be eaten right now, so therefore it is a snack. So it's in the eye of the beholder, I suppose.
Kind of like, I guess, when somebody wants to eat pancakes for dinner or oatmeal for dinner, and you're going, that's not for dinner, that's for breakfast. And somebody will say, who said that? Who made that rule?
Yeah, who said that? Who did? And, you know, I like the reverse. I like savory things for breakfast. Like, I would just be so happy with a couple heated up meatballs for breakfast or, you know, a piece of chicken for breakfast. And I often eat that kind of stuff for breakfast. And Charlie would, too. But Jack is definitely more of a traditionalist. And, you know, he wants breakfast food at breakfast and dinner food at dinner. But look, there, you know, whoever decided that eggs were only for breakfast, I'm not sure who decided that. I beg to differ.
Benedict Arnold, maybe.
Right.
Okay. Well, Katie, we have run out of time, but we want to tell people where they can go to look at your book and download some of the recipes and go out and buy the book and join your email and blogging and all that, because there's some wonderful things on your website. What is the website address?
The website is themom100 with the number 100.com. And yeah, all of that information is there.
Okay, we've been visiting with Katie Workman. Katie is the author of the book Dinner Solved, and she is also the author of the book The Mom 100, and her website is there, themom100, the number 100.com. Katie, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you. I really enjoyed talking with you.